irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your guest host today, Marvin Smith. For you new listeners that are out there, I was the co-host of this show for a few years with Mr. Alan Cardoza. Let me share this. Alan hates when I say Mr. Cardoza, because you know what that means. First of all, I'm respecting him, but it makes him sound older than myself. So he hates it. But anyway, on that note, I just want to share a couple things. Yesterday was my birthday. Woohoo. But I just want a couple shout outs here. Today is my dad's birthday. He just turned 83 young. And Friday is my mother's birthday. And then on the 21st is my oldest son's birthday, Marvin Jr. And I can go on and on and on. So, but anyway, just wanted to shout that out there. And to all my friends and the fellowship, hello to everyone. But more importantly, you know, that doesn't mean too much of anything, because today it's not about me. It's about the topic matter and the guests that we have on our show. So we're going to talk about a subject that's close and near to my heart. I am by training a behaviorist, a human behaviorist. I am an ordained minister. I have a background. I formerly played in the National Football League. And as I said before, all of that means nothing. It's just a backdrop to the subject matter where we're going. That's something deep, close to my heart, because we're going to be talking about education. We're going to be talking about athletics, and we're going to talk about the perils of being involved in those arenas at the highest level. Every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific Standard Time, this show will bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain you while bringing you answers and options to raising children today in a constantly changing future. So otherwise, we want to keep everything relevant as we move forward. Answers for the Family will address the issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, or dealing with addictions. I'm sure many of you expected to hear Mr. Cardoza. Alan, you're getting old out there. Or Alan, his voice this morning. Or Matt, who's not in the studio as well. But we're reminded of the reality of what he does when he's not on air, and that's Alan Cardoza. As a licensed and international private investigator and crisis interventionist, he gets calls and has to respond quickly. I was speaking with Alan on Friday. A scenario came up. He got a call. You know, whether it's locating a runaway teen, escorting a teen to a specialized program, or retrieving an abducted child. But as I was talking to Alan, he brought to my attention, he got a call from a parent, and there was a situation with a runaway, a parent had a runaway daughter. And what's kind of unique about this, and I can understand from the crisis in the heart of a father, that in the process, the father thinks that she's now involved with gangs, and even more dramatic than that, human trafficking. So Alan, I just hope you all the success out there while you're out there on this case. I know you have done well in the process, and I wish you well. Many blessings as you help that family. Now, before I introduce our guests, I'm going to ask a huge favor. Please forward at least one of our shows to your social media groups or to someone you know that can benefit from a particular subject. And if you want to know about the different topics that have gone on the show, you can go to the website at Answers, the number four, the family, answersforthefamily.com, or LA Talk Radio, Answers for the Family. I am, as I said before, I'm excited about our show today. Our guest Let me share a little bit about our guest. Her name is Kate Genovese. She was born in Watertown, Massachusetts, a suburb of Boston, and was the sixth of seven children. Her parents were big on education and reading. I told you we're going to talk about education. Her father encouraged reading at least three books a month since the age of six. So we can imagine her house is a book of knowledge. Kate's passion for writing didn't start until she was well into her 40s. She was going through a difficult time in her life, and the event occurred when her child and family of origin that led Kate to write her first unpublished book, A Silence So Still. She realized the healing aspect of writing and created characters and went to publish three books. Went on to three books so far. One of the books is 30 Years in September, A Nurse's Memoir, which is a autobiography. Loving Joe Gallucci, In 2 Weeks Since My Last Confession, which is a fictional family drama. Well, anyway, here we go. This is the topic. This is the book. This is the title. Hat Tricks from Heaven, the story of an athlete in his own prison of addictions. As I said, this subject matter, it's going to be personal. It's going to be not just personal to the author, but there's a lot of parents out there and individuals this is going to be personal too. You know, we're going to bring you this story, and it's sad because it happened to Kate, but it could happen to anyone. And it's happening to a lot of people. As I was looking at some statistics here lately on our subject matter, and we have a problem in America. Kate Genovese, who has just written the book, Hat Tricks from Heaven, is going to offer, give some insightful information. I mean, as I'm going through my head here and thinking, as I said, this is a, Kate, I just first and foremost want to, you know, give my condolences. As well as the show. Going forward, when Kate Genovese's son, Christopher Gino, died of an accidental overdose, she felt her world would come to an end. Trick from Heaven, the story of an athlete in his own prison of addictions, is a true story of the golden boy who grew up in a loving family, surrounded by friends, effortlessly sailing through high school, college, and then promotions in his career. What could be wrong? Considered an outstanding hockey player, as time went on, his performance suffered due to knee and shoulder injuries. Kate learned later that he was forced to take a few Percocets to make it through a game because of the pain was horrific. Addiction afflicts in the wealthy communities just as often as it does in their lower income areas. Kate's purpose in writing this book was to open every parent's eyes and help them recognize the signs and symptoms of an opiate problem before it's too late. Joining us as our guest today, Kate shares her family story and her powerful message, beware and educate and don't hide in denial. Good morning, Kate. How are you?
Good morning, Marvin. Thank you for having me on, and happy birthday to you.
Oh, well, thank you. But as I said, it's not about, well, oh, let me share one thing about birthdays. I heard something a while ago, and they said, those who have birthdays live longer. So I'm going to try to keep having birthdays. And good health and in great mind. And hopefully I can continue to keep living long here. And then the other parts I like of our having the opportunity to do, I call it God's work at this point in my life. And just really, you know, looking at the humanities and things that are happening and being a voice, being a support. So I'm looking, we all are looking forward to hearing your story.
Oh, great. Well, do you want me to start?
Let me start with this.
Okay.
And something I have as a question here. It says, as we're looking at the story, I mean, it's a sad story. And when did you first know that your son had an issue with addiction? And
when did I very first know of Gino's addiction?
Yes.
Well,
I tell you what, Kate, let's do this, because I'm thinking about that, because I just want to jump right to it. Why don't you, you know, for the listeners, you can give a background and your thoughts and then kind of move into that question.
Okay. I'll just start with telling you a little bit about my Gino. He was a really fun, loving kid. Everybody loved to be around him. I know all mothers probably say that, but I'm one of them. He was a good son. That is what I want to stress. He was good to me and his dad and his sister and brother. He had tons of friends. His wake was over 400 people. I mean, there was tears everywhere. He was loved, and he had a disease. That disease is addiction. That just is everywhere. You said earlier, I heard you say that it was, it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. There's no zip code to this disease. Anybody can get it. And Gino was susceptible. That runs in my family. Addiction runs in families. Mm. And I questioned whether or not he had an addiction, I'd say when he was 17. He had been very good at hockey and had the opportunity to go to a private high school paid for. And, you know, we just thought, my husband and I thought he was going to play hockey. That was his goal. But he gets there and he goes, oh, my God, I got to play football. Are you kidding me? I mean, really? And I looked at my husband and said, no. All I can hear is, like, my husband played football in high school. I said, all I could hear was crack, like the helmets cracking against each other. And he said, that's no worse than being banged against the sideboard. So we let him play. And the second time he's on the field, he hurts his knee. And he has to have surgery immediately in ninth grade. So he had the surgery, was back on the field, playing football, back on the ice, playing hockey. And he was, he had a total of 6 surgeries, by the way. But at the age of 17, when his shoulder gave out, that's when it entered my mind, because he had the surgery and he came home. He lived away at school and he came home, had the surgery and was out for a month. I was driving him back about an hour away, and he said, oh, can we stop at the doctor's? I have to pick up my prescription. And I said, what? You're a month out of surgery. You're not getting any more drugs. And he, the good addict that he is, because addicts are very good at manipulation, he convinced me how much pain he was in still, and he had to have something. So I said, okay, I'm going to leave this up to the doctor. So we went there, and I said to him, I knew him because I'm a nurse and I worked with him before. He's an excellent surgeon. But I said, I really don't think Gino should have any more drugs. Can we switch to Motrin? And he said, "Don't you know how painful shoulder surgery is?" He said, "I said,
now, what, real quick, was that the doctor? Was that the doctor, or was this Gino?"
"That was the doctor."
"Oh."
"He said, don't you realize how painful shoulder surgery is? And he needs his Percocet." And I said, "Well, I'm worried. Addiction runs in my family." And he said to me, "Your son is not an addict, and he wants to get back on the ice," and handed him a prescription. So I was very intimidated. I didn't say anything. And, you know, I was pretty angry, but we got the prescription filled, went back to school, and I took the prescription bottle and gave it to the school nurse, and I said, "Please dish these out as he needs them." And he was so mad at me. And that is the first time I was the look in his face when he did not have control of those drugs.
Wow.
I could tell he wanted to control what he was taking. Later on, much later, when we knew he was an addict, he said that he had to take 2 Percocet between every period just to play of hockey and football. But he played hockey only in college.
Only in college, okay.
So, yeah, he did not play football.
So let me, for our listeners, so as I'm tracking, as I'm listening, so we're looking at a situation where these injuries occurred initially in high school. So looking at the kind of the start here. And, and as a former athlete myself and playing in, at the highest level, I can understand, there's a factor that happens here that it starts off like, because we're in this competitive sport and you want to, there's something innate about, especially men, you want to play. And if you love the game, all of a sudden you will do whatever it takes so that you can play. And just like football and in hockey, there's another factor that's going on too, is this whole thing with the concussion and the brain injuries that are not helping the matter. And the other factor is we look at for the game. We have doctors that are associated around the game and those who are, that are ancillary, who are perpetuating the situation and not looking at sometime the individual and the well-being of the person.
I agree with that. I mean, as an athlete, you must feel that they just, you're good. They just want you back out the field. They want you back out on the ice. They're thinking everybody gets hurt. I mean, I was watching my son teach his hockey pals how to shove his shoulder back into the socket because it would fall out during, come right out during a game if he got checked. Sometimes.
Yes.
And so he taught everybody. He even taught me. One time he was swimming and I had to shove it back in for him. And boy, that's a painful. I mean, he was living in pain.
Yes.
He was living in physical pain and emotional pain, spiritual pain. He had so many demons and nobody knew it. Except him. Maybe some others. Maybe his girlfriend, Heather, who was absolutely wonderful.
Right.
Stood by him for as long as she could stand by him. They were together for 8 years. And if you have the book, you see the beautiful picture of them together.
Yes, I see.
But regardless, so many people can only take living with an addict. It's very, very hard.
Yes. Well, and the other thing too, Kate, that I, just from understanding and knowledge for our listeners, I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, but as a human behaviorist and then being around the game and people and life, you start to, there's two things I want to share. I mean, we talk about addictions and we talk about, there is no zip code to addiction. There's not. And one thing that I have been able to, looking at some of the work that I'm involved in, the difference between addiction in more of the affluent environment versus the impoverished environment is that it's just in the impoverished environment, it's raw, it's in your face because there's no way to fully mask the addiction. And some of the work I've done in the wealthy or the more affluent families is that there's a lot of things that are going on, so there's layers to it, and it's it's harder sometimes to really identify it. And you know, and as we move forward, I would definitely love for you kind of to share, especially as a nurse, your thoughts behind that. But, you know, I look at addiction, it's psychological, it's physical, and then it's even spiritual. So you have these three realms that we're kind of dealing in, and when you're dealing with that, then you said something, the term family, generational. And then I talk about things that you know, that are generational, that end up being spiritual, can be physical and mental. And so, you know, these are areas and things that we have to address, but it's, like I said, this is, we have a problem in America. And you know, and unfortunately, you know, I look at some of the data and some of the things I'm involved in at a higher level, and we, you know, within the industry, there's some problems that needs to be addressed, and we won't get in that today, but unfortunately, it imposes a lot of harsh realities on families, and that's the tough part, and that's why, you know, that why we're sharing today. So, thank you. So go ahead, Kate. I'm kind of thinking through some of the things you're sharing.
Yeah, no, you're making some good points, very good points, and I think the main thing is that society has a stigma on addiction. They think that you are a low life. I've seen it as a nurse, especially. I mean, the medical field has a long way to come to realize that this is a disease. They're treated very poorly in the emergency room, on the floors. Yes. They just are not looked at as a human being. It's getting better, but it's not there yet.
Not there yet.
I want that stigma to stop, because my son died respectively. He had a disease. He overdosed by accident. And there's tons of kids out there doing it. I mean, there's so many. One in a town near me, Lowell, one weekend a few weeks ago, there was 353 overdoses.
Oh my gosh. Oh.
I mean, this fentanyl that they're putting in the heroin is killing.
Yes.
It's just killing.
Yes.
And one of my goals is to arrest these people that are dealing. You know, a lot of them, many of them do not, in my research, do not have an addiction. They're doing it for a living. And they're driving their Beamers around and have their, you know, girls on their arms and tons of clothes and money. And, you know, that's what's happening.
Well, it's,
and I want...
Yes.
I mean, I know there's another side to it. I know there's probably some that are doing it, to, you know, just because they're addicted, too. I realize that.
Well, and there's a lot. Like you said, it's an industry out there, and it's, you know, I call it the black market, and there are those who are making money, making a living, and it goes all the way from the streets, and it goes all the way to the manufacturers. And I would say, you know, 40% of opiate prescription or addiction, as I'm looking at data, are 40% is based off of prescribed pills. You think that's a huge number. 40% is from, you know, being prescribed through our medical system. You know, so first of all, I think we got to take a really good look at that. And I know some things are going on at the congressional level, and you know, we have to address it. And then you look at the other is just now when you start to tailor, if you don't deal with the addiction, one of the things that you have is now, if I can't, I became addicted through the prescriptions. Now I can no longer get the prescription, so now what? So now I look at the physical addiction of the drug, so now I'm forced to go out into the street somewhere and get it illegal. So now if I can't get the opiates in a prescribed pill, so then I'm, what's the next level? Then we go to heroin. And then, right. And then the thing you're saying is now the heroin is being laced with this fentanyl, which is, you know, which makes it even deadlier because there's no control. And we're having, I was just reading the other day, we had from 2000 and, what was it, 6 to 2016, there was like something like 200,000 deaths.
I know.
ODing. I mean, and it's an epidemic. Yeah. And I love, like in the book, you had a caption there and it says, you know, it says, I will kidnap you, raise you, then turn you to your family so they can bury you. Heroin. Wow.
Yes. And that is a powerful statement. And it is the absolute truth. That's what happened. I was, when he died, I was away. I just went away with my sisters and my brother to our place in New Hampshire. My husband stayed home. Gino was on house arrest, but he was supposed to get off of it and start a new job. He had to be home at 10 o'clock at night, so he came home, and him and his dad are very close. You know, they have a great relationship, and
yes,
he was a lot more loving to Gino than I was during this, I'll tell you that. But I was trying to be the tough guy, and he was the true Italian that he is. He loved his son so much. And he was watching show with them at 10 o'clock. He picked him up off the end of the street. And so they were watching the show. And then Gary, my husband, said, well, after an hour, I'm going to go to bed, Gino, and I'll see you in the morning and put the lights out and, you know, whatever. And so our dog, Frankie, stayed down with Gino, which he always does. Beautiful white lab. Golden retriever. So anyways, I get a call at 2:30 in the morning, and it was my daughter Jessie informing me that Mom Gino died. And I said, he did not. And she said, yes, I'm sorry.
Wow.
And I said, get Dad on the phone. And I guess he had gotten up to, for whatever, my husband got up to whatever, go to the bathroom maybe, and he saw the light on, so he went downstairs and he found him in the den with just dead on the floor with Frankie right near him. So he quickly called the 911, and a friend of his that was on the police department was around, and he came over first, and they tried to revive him, but they couldn't. Mm-hmm. At Leahy Clinic, they did their best. So, you know, sad story that has probably happening right now to somebody, some beautiful child.
Yeah, well,
child is gone, and he's, you know, dead.
Well, looking at the statistics,
so yeah, we absolutely got to do something about this. I mean, even if we start just in our own community, you know, just in well, you live in LA, so that's pretty big, right?
Yes. It's like a 300, LA, the county is like a 325 mile radius. Hey,
I loved LA. I loved LA when we went to visit. We have relatives there. But there was so much traffic.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, hours to get someplace.
That is true. That is true. But it's a beautiful place to be. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, Kate, and as we're moving forward. And how are you feeling right now?
Well, you know, it's always sad when I tell a story.
Yes.
And I hadn't been mentioning my husband too much, you know. And then finally I said, you know, he has feelings. Like everybody asks the woman how she's doing. Kate, how are you doing since Gino died? I don't know how many people just forget about the husband, like they're strong enough and they can take it. But he certainly needs to be recognized, and every father out there needs to be recognized.
Yes.
You know. But I mean, I'm telling you, he was he was my rock during all of this. I couldn't have done any of what we had to do, the burial and everything, if it wasn't for my husband just by my side.
Well, we definitely want to give some
a shout out to your husband there. What did you say?
So we definitely want to give a big shout out and kudos and embracing hug to your husband through the process, because you're right. It's not, as a father myself, I can only imagine if I were to think about my son, and as I said, my oldest son's birthday is a few weeks away, and how I would feel just as a father, you know.
Exactly.
And so it's just, but it makes you think. It's just devastating, period, for a family. So which takes me to this question, as you talk about the family, let's talk about addiction as a family illness. And explain, as you shared that and you talk about it in the book.
Well, it is a family illness, as many diseases are, because you get involved with that person. That person becomes the focus of the whole house because of their behavior, because they're so sick, because they're crying their eyes out, or they're screaming and punching holes in the wall, or they're begging you for money, or begging you to help them. Of course, it's a family disease. Everybody's running to try to help that person. You forget to help yourself. And then all of a sudden you realize, I'm losing it here. I got to do something for me. So what I did is I started going to Al-Anon, 12-step program for families who have to live with this. And my husband did other things. And then I have a very strong faith, so I turned to God as well.
Yes.
But, all of us in the family were trying to help them. My daughter, Jessie, was a social worker, was wonderful. The love she had for her brother. And to see somebody not get well when they could get well by just stopping. And I don't say that easily, because it's hard to just stop. I mean, it takes intensive treatment.
Yes.
I have a girlfriend who I worked with for many years at Leahy Clinic. She's a nurse. And she had injuries at work with her back and ended up addicted. And she works in addiction now, but it took her a long time to get straight. She said the only way she could do it was to get away from absolutely everybody she knew that was related to drugs and stay away for 9 months. With intensive treatment. That's how she got better. And then she goes to meetings every single day. If she misses a meeting, it's like missing a meal. That's what she said. She has to go in order to stay straight.
Day by day.
And it's hard.
It's day by day. Addiction is
day by day.
And it's interesting to all you listeners out there, I just want to say this. If there's no one immediately in your family that you're dealing with an addiction, I guarantee you that there's someone around you, someone close to you, a neighbor, a cousin, a relative. Somebody around you is dealing with addiction. And I believe, it's going to take all of us collectively working together. There's some other bodies of work that I'm involved with that's dealing with some of the issues around racism and reconciliation. And I'm going to use this as a lady of faith, a ploy of the enemy to divide and conquer us, is to separate us so that if we come together collectively, there's power in that. And there's power in love. And I'll touch base on a little later, but it's, you're right, Kate. We got to come together, and the more that we work together, the more we're going to be able to eradicate the situation of the issues of addiction. And it's around us. It's lurking. It's there. So on that note, Kate, then what about, and how difficult was it to find a rehab facility for Gino? I know, you know, going through this, and once you figured out that the addiction was there, what was your take on how to share a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, we had, he first of all, when we found out he really had an addiction, his roommate from college called up and said, Gino's really sick. He needs help. Mm. So my husband went up to where he was. He was sitting at a bar, drinking a beer, tears in his eyes. He couldn't even afford the beer. And my husband just said, what's going on? We got a call from so-and-so. And Gino admitted it. He said, I'm really screwed up. I need help. So he had a good job, too. He was a salesman for a lumber company, at a company car. And okay. So we brought him home, and he said, I want to go to meetings. I do not want to go to rehab. I can't be locked in like that. So I was against it. I said, this is like, what, you know, if you had cancer, we'd be treating it, you know,
right.
Getting chemotherapy and this and that. I said, you need to do that. Like, you need to go to a rehab.
Well, I like what you said, because interesting. Think about it. If you have cancer and you go to chemo, you don't fix chemo by yourself. I mean, you don't fix a cancer by yourself. You usually, there's something you have to do definitively.
Exactly. But, you know, he really wanted to try without it. So he did. And he did it for a while. A while, I mean 2 weeks. Mm. And then he slipped. A slip is when you start using again. For those out there who are listening and don't know what I'm talking about, but
yes.
When you have a slip, you just go back to drugs. So he had a slip, and now you got to remember he's not playing hockey anymore,
right?
And he's not getting a prescription, so he's out in the street trying to get stuff. And so when he didn't come home one night, we knew something was up. And when he finally came home, he was high, and we said, you got to go. This is it. You got to get some help. And he took off. He left. And we didn't see him for like a month. So that was the pattern. He did not want to get locked up. That's all he could think of in his head, getting locked up. But he got in trouble with the law, and he had accidents. He lost his job. He had a company car that he smashed up. He found some drugs in it. You know, just a variety of things that that addicts do, he did.
Right.
And so he didn't. Now he's just totally into his disease. He's really bad. He can't live with us. He goes and lives with somebody else. And he stays in touch, so we know he's alive. And my sister's really sick out in Oregon, and so I went out there to see her, to help her. And while I was there, he did get in another accident, and they put him in jail.
Wow.
His biggest fear.
Wow.
So I still stayed in Oregon a little while, because he was going to be in there a month, but we found a lawyer for him and found a rehab for him. We couldn't find one bed in Massachusetts. It was February. We could not find one. It was on MassHealth now. Which
you could
is,
not find one bed
rehab.
Available in Massachusetts.
Yeah, when I say one bed, just picture a rehab hospital.
Right.
And they have to have so many beds that are free for the community. And so there was none. There was
wow.
a two-month waiting list.
Wow.
So, I know it. So my sister Carrie helped me find one. We looked in New Hampshire, New England, and nothing in New England either. So we found
gosh.
One in Florida that was perfect. And we would have had to pay initially, and then he would, once he was well, he would pay himself. And
okay.
So we talked to him about it. He agreed. That was great. The lawyer, I mean, we went as far as almost buying the plane ticket. We were so sure he was going to get out of jail. But what happened was the judge listened to the what the lawyer had to say and looked at the piece of paper that was presented to him with all the information. He rolled it up in a ball and threw it at the lawyer and said, this kid's not leaving Massachusetts. I'd like to go to Florida, too. He didn't even ask us what we had been through. Nothing.
Wow.
Wow. It was horrible.
Jeez.
So
anyway,
Gino came up with the idea of house arrest. These kids just know everything.
Yeah.
So we agreed house arrest, which was the worst thing we ever could have done, because he had to go to this place every day to have treatment. Treatment, I mean, they had to take his urine, make sure he wasn't using drugs, and have classes. But he met people there, and I'm not going to say they were worse than him, well, but they were. They were in the system a lot longer since they were like 12 years old.
Right.
They were addicts. They were 12 and they were 40.
Wow. It was a way of life.
So he was introduced.
Became a way of life. I mean, they
yeah, way of life. That's their way
they
of
know
life.
The system.
And
you
so
know,
now this is his way of life. It was just tremendously horrible. But he somehow always managed to, well, once he could get some freedom, because he still had to wear this GPS, he always worked. He never lost that worth effort. That,
wow.
I believe he got from his dad. He never lost it. It was like something you have to do. So we said, all right, you work, but you got to give us your money or else it's going to go to drugs. So unfortunately, he never followed through with that. And
yes.
He came home with us on house arrest and went to this place every day. And I drove him until he could take a train. And I got to tell you, I got to know my son. During those straight times, I got to know him because he didn't live with us in high school.
Okay, because he was at school.
I mean, his teachers probably knew him better than we knew him.
Right.
But he was the funniest kid, and we would have just a blast for that half hour ride to Lowell with our dog in the back of the car, and you know he would sing to me. He had the worst voice in the world. He would sing these horrible songs, but we just would crack up laughing. I mean, it sounds so simplistic, but I got to know my Gino.
Yes. You know, and Kate, I'm looking at the clock. Wow, time is just flying by.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, there's a couple other questions I really want to get to for the listeners. And,
go ahead.
I have a call-in listener. I have a question here just came through. Says, my best friend in college lost her scholarship because of an opiate addiction that also led her to taking other illegal drugs, for which she was arrested and charged for possession. A football player, he had suffered a back injury that was so serious he should have never had been allowed back on the field. Instead, he was given painkillers. I think your book is a must-read, not just for parents, but for young athletes as well. And that's Joyce from New Jersey. Thank you, Joyce, for that question and for that, that input. So any thoughts quick on that, Kate? Does it sound similar? Is it some tie-ins there?
Yeah.
So, okay. So, because time is flying. So here we go. What advice do you have for other parents out there who may be going through this same situation? And then I want you could touch base on that, and then I want to come back and maybe go to, you know, just some information on your book. Okay?
Absolutely. I have a lot to say. First of all, when they're 12 years old, just start noticing things. Even if you think they're good kids, just notice. Look at their eyes. Look at their whole body. Look at everything they do. Look at the kids they hang around with. Sports-wise, if they're playing sports and they suddenly quit for no reason. that's an indicator that something might be going on. If they're having trouble in school, if they suddenly become angry, all those are indicators. Teachers should be watching out. It's okay to check their room. You know how kids just don't want you to go in their rooms and it's private, they want it locked?
Yes.
That's a no-no. You can find so many things in that room. You're the one who is paying the mortgage in that house. You have a right to go in there and do whatever you want. And I didn't do that. Mm. So that's one thing is very important.
Okay.
Secondly, never give them money. If there's an addict, if you know that they're high or whatever, do not give them money, ever. It's dangerous. It's like handing them a death wish. And, and lock your things up. I was, during his time he was living with us, I had surgery, and I had medication myself, and I had it just under my pillow. Well, that wasn't good enough. He took it.
So, wow.
When I was asleep.
Yes.
So you get a lockbox, you lock it up, or you put it in your glove compartment and lock it up.
And the other factor on that, too, is even looking at, you know, valuables around the house, if you're not giving them money, then they start to get real crafty. All of a sudden, things start disappearing around the house. I mean,
exactly.
I've heard that from others.
Yeah, you got to hide your jewelry.
Yes.
That's for sure. Hide your jewelry. Anything that comes out of an addict's mouth is a lie. They're not telling you the truth when they hide. Do not believe them. That is hard to say, but it's the truth. And they got to learn to get respected again with this disease.
Yes.
They can't expect once, I've been sober for 2 weeks now. Can I go out? No. Mm. I'm sorry, you can't.
And so what there's a difference when knowing when they're high and asking a question that you're not going to get the truth, knowing when they're not high, it's going to be more normalized and you're going to get information like you should, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I agree with that. And I didn't do a lot of those things. And I thought I was going crazy. I thought I was losing my mind because that time he took the pills, he said, "Mom, you took those. You got up about three times in the middle of the night. I know you." I mean, I was starting to believe what he was telling me.
Mm.
Wow. And thank God for God and my husband.
Yes.
And Al-Anon and all the support system I had.
Yes.
It was just very, very hard.
Yes.
You just got to be aware. But during all this time, you have to take care of yourself.
Yes.
That's a very important thing. Take care of yourself. And let your kid know you love them. I mean, I told him every day, "I love you. I don't love the disease you have."
You're right.
"I love you, Christopher." I called him Christopher. "I love you, Christopher. From the bottom of my heart, I hate your disease." And I would say that over and over until it would drive him crazy.
Yes.
But I meant it. And they got to know their love.
Yes.
But they got to be watched.
Right, right.
Then there's a point, you know, until they're, I think it's 16 or 17 legal age, do everything you can. Make them do things. I mean, he was 30 years old. I could not make him do anything. He wasn't doing anything harmful to me. He never hit us, anything like that. He was a danger to himself, but that was because of the drugs. And when that happened, he was not in the home too much.
And that's another thing that we found out, that we know that as far as the work that I've done with Alan and runaway teens and addictions and families and teens, is that there's this issue of took that time, that when they're underage, there's a whole lot more you can do legally than once they become of age.
Yeah.
Because
you are totally right.
There were kids that we dealt with that once they hit that legal age of 18, that the parent had no say for them to go to a program or not. So it's really a lot. It's better to try to catch it young, catch it early, and we could go on and on and on and talking about this subject matter because it's dear to my heart, because it's killing America. I mean we're an addicted country, and I hate to say that, but I believe, I have great faith that we're about to see the turnaround in this country in a whole lot of fronts. And, you know, and Kate, I just want to thank you for the time here. I mean, we've used up all our time. But in closing, where can listeners go for more information about you and your book? Because I think they really need to get the book to get the full grasp. I mean, it's a phenomenal book. You know, I've read through it, and there's some great takeaways, and all our listeners need to have it. So can you share?
Yeah, absolutely. So the title, once again, is Hat Tricks from Heaven, and you can get it on my website, KateGeneviseBooks.com. There's a link to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or you can just go to your local bookstore and order it, or there's many online places you can get it. And some of the proceeds are going to go to addiction. I would love to get some sober houses and a sober house built. That is my dream. It would be Gino's home.
Yes.
So that is my goal.
Yes.
So buy the book for your friends. Just, I think it's full of information and it's interesting to read. And, you know, as you're reading it, just feel how grateful you are.
Yes.
If you do have a child that is alive, just hug them. And just share the book with them.
Yes.
The teenagers, they certainly can read this book.
Yeah.
I try not to swear in it because I wanted teenagers to read this. I want to be speaking at high schools, which I'm starting to do. And so you can get my book just about anywhere, even through my publisher, Fidelity Publishing. They're in the Midwest. But it's easy enough to get it. A lot of people just go to Amazon.
Okay.
And, that's a pretty easy place to go.
Well, thank you for the information, Kate. And we've ran the gamut here that we are out of time. And I just want to, once again, thank you for the time. Thank you for the book. And I know I can speak on behalf of Alan and the Answer for the Family group that whatever we can do and support, always feel free to reach out. Thank you.
Okay, and people can reach out to me through my website, too. I answer emails and all that.
All right, thank you, Kate.
Oh, thank you so much.
Once again, that's Hat Trick from Heaven, the story of an athlete in his own prison of addiction. In closing, please be sure to put on your calendar and tune in to our next Monday when we have our guest will be Max LeGrand. Our guest will be Max LeGrand, author of Genius Foods, Become Smarter, Happier, and More Productive While Protecting Your Brain. Please visit our archives of our past shows. You can go to AnswersForTheFamily.com or subscribe to your iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube or Vimeo. Once again, thank you.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polachek, only on LA Talk Radio.